Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
We are back. Back again. Ixalan's back. Tell a friend.
At the last minute, as they're all playing Hungry Hungry Hippos, the floor collapses.
ESDP, you know, extrasensory dinosaur perception.
It gives you things and stuff off the top of your deck. How could you not like that?
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean. I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
I think we're having a good day so far.
We are having a great day so far. It's Friday morning, beautiful day, no rain, no fog. It's fantastic.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's fog this morning. I woke up at like 6-something, 6:30, and there was fog and ice.
Ooh. Well, there was ice on my windshield this morning when I took my daughter to school. But, you know, it's sunny outside, and Fresno also begins with an F for fantastic. So,
you know what? It also starts. What also starts with an F?
What?
Flipside Gaming.
Oh, look at you with the segue.
Where, of course, you guys can go and buy all your needs, find all information about Magic the Gathering and other games like Pokemon, Star Wars, Destiny. And remember, there is that code to get, what was the percent off? 10?
10%.
Yeah, which is the win condition in all caps. And, you know, by you doing that, it helps us to help you. You help us. We help you. You help us. Things like that. Yeah. You know it.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And don't forget, we will be having a giveaway coming up here on episode 50. And we will have details coming up on how to enter that. So keep your ears open. All right. Well, Greg, How about we start off just with a nice little casual chat about some magic? What magic have you played this week?
Well, you guys all know I'm a horrible, filthy casual, and I play Commander.
And you love Anointed Procession.
Oh, Anointed Procession is so good. I remember when you called me up on Saturday saying that somebody on stream drops Anointed Procession and the opponent scooped.
Exactly. That's immediately what I thought of. I'm like, oh my god, if Greg isn't watching this, we gotta send you the link to it
gotta tell me. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Like, I gotta ask. So I talked to a couple of my friends from the local store I play at, and they all were like, well, what was on the field? Was there like a hidden stockpile? What other reason would you go scoop to Anointed Procession? Especially if they don't have a board state.
Well, there was definitely a hidden stockpile out. Possibly even two, I think.
Oh. Yeah, dude had game on board. So yeah. That's why. Okay, that makes a lot more sense. We were just kind of thinking, like, why would you scoop to hit Anointed Procession?
Right.
Unless there's other cards on the board that said you just lose, that is exactly the reason here. Okay, yep. So I played some EDH. I dismantled my Esper Zombies deck because I never touch it, and it was always way too clunky to play. Because zombies are really clunky.
Yeah, they can be.
Impossible to be really synergistic because there's no zombies that create mana.
True.
They only make things cheaper.
Right.
So I was playing a bunch of different decks. I mean, I played my mono red dragons, and I played Nekuzar, and I played Tasigur, and just had some fun.
The classics.
I did get to play with dinosaurs, and I Gishath somebody for like 11, and I dropped 8 dinosaurs off of that.
Gishath is just so good. I think it's just, you know, solidifying the fact that if you want a Naya Dino Commander, it's obviously Gishath. And Zakama can be in the 99, but Command definitely goes to Gishath.
Zakama was one of the cards that I dropped, and I was able to go, there are 3 artifacts on the board that I do not like. Get rid of them.
Mm-hmm.
It was really good.
Eat your artifact, eat your artifact, eat your artifact.
Yeah. Well, one of them was an enchantment. Phyrexian Arena can't really stay.
Nice.
It was good. But the star of the night that I have to talk about was Atali, the Primal Storm, as a general.
That mono red love.
Which we don't get very much often in EDH.
No, I mean, usually you could see like maybe a Kikijiki or a Duretti or something like that, but Atali brings a whole new aspect.
Yeah, yeah. No, it really did. So the interesting thing that most that my friend built is that this was build one, and he was running like 15 extra attack step spells.
He was in his deck.
In his deck.
Oh, wow.
at least something like that. I mean, enchantments and other stuff, but you got to remember that when you're running that, Atali doesn't care what type of card it is as long as it's a card that can be cast.
Right, right.
So no lands. But essentially, he would swing in a group of four. Usually, he'd get like a planeswalker, a creature, an enchantment, and an artifact or a spell from his deck. And then he was running all the duplicates, so he'd go like, oh, I'll seize the day, then copy it.
Jeez.
Give himself two attack steps. Then he'll flash it back and copy it again.
Wait, was he running Atali?
Yeah, Atali was his general.
Oh, he was playing this deck. Oh, okay, I thought you were playing this deck. I'm sorry.
No, I have not made this deck, although it does seem really cute and fun to play.
Absolutely.
I don't like to be this guy that just keeps attacking every turn to make my stuff go. I would prefer to amass and then hoard you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know how I play.
Oh, yeah.
But this card seems really good for 1v1 commander because the ability to just be able to attack and pull spells out of your opponent's deck every time you attack is just good.
Yeah.
Especially
with those attack steps. Like, that's brutal.
It really was.
I did listen a little while ago to the Commanderin podcast, and Sean Watson, one of the hosts in the show, was talking about an Atali build that he made that actually focused on mass land destruction, because you're in red. And if you're, you know, Atali-ing all these spells for free, you don't really need land. Why not just stop your opponent from doing what they're doing and just win? And it seemed really, really vicious and mean and brutal. Effective, yes, but also included those multiple attack steps. So Atali seems like it can have potential to be a really heinous commander.
Well, the only thing that I have problem with a deck that landies is if you're not winning on the next turn, why are you playing it?
That's true, but if you're also casting all these big commandery spells for free...
I mean, sure, I understand that, but commander's about having fun.
Well, to most people.
If you're making it so only one person is doing things, it really hinders the game.
That's true, but I mean, you can't say that you haven't built a deck, at least one, at some point, where its focus was just to annihilate everything else, all stop. No consideration whatsoever, you know?
No, I've never done that. I've
You've
only
never
done
done
decks that.
That
destroy all the creatures. I've never had ones that focus on eating lands. Now, there was a point where my mono green deck was running Massacre with Kamal Fist of Krosa, but I never used it in that respect.
I mean, I made that Urtai Wizard Adept deck, and I was running things like Arcane Laboratory and untap effects, so you could cast one spell a turn and I would counter it and then untap Urtai during everyone's turn. But, you know, you're right. You know, if I'm doing that, then I'd better have a way to either get a win immediately, because nobody wants to sit around and do absolutely nothing. But my point is that Atali with Mass Land Destruction seems like the game could end relatively quickly.
Yes. Pretty much.
Yeah. So, but anyway, any other highlights from that Atali deck? I mean, it sounds awesome.
Not really. No.
Okay.
Mostly just the ability to cast and recast stuff. Copying spells. It just take advantage of what's being played.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it was doing.
So would you run something like Reverberate in an Atali deck?
Oh, yeah. Twincast, or not Twincast. Twincast in red is good. Funny thing, he was main decking Red Elemental Blast and Hydro Blast.
Ooh, that's pretty good. There's a lot of blue floating around Commander, too. And maybe Mirari as well, if you really want to have some fun.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. He might have been running that, but first iterations are never, you know, solid.
Right, right. You want to tune it up. That's part of the fun of building these EDH decks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay, all right. Well, that's awesome. Let's move on. We've got, oh, man, Greg, we've got some great story to go over here. So
what? It's like they know what we're looking for.
Yeah, yeah. So let's make haste over to Lore Corner.
Story time.
All right, so we join our first group of friends here with well, not really friends, but we have Huatli, and recently separated briefly from Angrath, and they're both bolting towards where they believe the Immortal Sun is, the city of Araska.
Yeah, they're bolting towards the inky black in the sky.
sure. So they're, you know, this is briefly after Angrath charged ahead, and Huatli's like, you know, oh no, you don't. You get back here. So Huatli, summons.
Oh,
up
don't forget about the dinosaur bit.
Oh yeah, no, Huatli's summoning up a dinosaur to go and take down Angrath, because the dinosaur obviously can run way faster than Huatli. And sure enough, she gets a dinosaur to go and subdue the Minotaur pirate and kind of nail him to the ground. And she comes up and's like, you got this under control? Dinosaur's like, I got this. And Angrath's just, you know...
Wait, that dinosaur was talking? Did I miss something?
No. I mean, you know, mentally, she got that ESDP, you know, extrasensory dinosaur perception. So she continues on, and Angrath is sitting there trying to fight off this dinosaur. So she starts to approach the city. And is this where she meets up with Tishana?
No, they meet up with Tishana way before that.
Oh, okay.
Because Tishana and Angrath are all there together, and Tishana's like has an issue with Angrath plowing through the forest because it's destroying it, and they both kind of stop Angrath, and then they charge into the city together as Tishana gets back on the elemental mount from before. Once they get back into the city, they're talking a little bit, and one of the things that they point out is, hey, look, the sky is turning black. I wonder who's on the Immortal Sun. I think we need to get there. And then, at that moment, they get closer into the city. A figure falls from a tower.
Falling body.
A bluish-green figure. Yeah, that's right. It totally is Kamena. Kamena is thrown from the city. And, of course, Tishana rushes over there. Floats some air magic in there, pillows his fall so he can talk. As they start doing this, a bunch of merfolk just come out of the woodwork from everywhere. It was kind of weird. Yep. And they all are kind of there standing around mourning Kamena because he's essentially dying. At this point, Huatli's running up to the tower after this kind of serene moment with the merfolk. And Tishana is following behind on another jade idol. And they get up to the top and they see Vona sitting on the Immortal Sun and Mavrin sitting aside. There's some conversing that happens. And then they notice out of sight of their eye, they all start kind of walking towards a window. And one of the sirens from the belligerent is there, calling them to leave the Immortal Sun. And Breaches is, we want Sun. We want Sun.
Good old Breaches.
And he's swinging at Vona. So there's just this kind of madcap going on in this room where all these different forces are kind of fighting off each other. And then the siren breaks free from it, stops singing the song. Breaches swings at Vona. Nothing really happens there. and Angras shows up.
Yeah, busting the door down.
Destroying it.
Yep.
And throwing the head of the dinosaur on the ground.
Yep.
And Whatley is pissed.
Oh, yeah.
So they're all there. Now, all four of them are there. Tishana has subdued Mavren Fane against the wall. Breaches and the Siren are still outside. And everybody kind of looks at each other as like, mine in their mind. And they all reach for the Immortal Sun at once. And each of them start feeling the power of the Immortal Sun on their own. So Angras starts burning red hot. And he just starts melting through the floor. Whatley realizes that there are five elder dinosaurs sitting around that are now awakened. And is reminded of the past and the elder dinosaurs and how many years it took for her to get there. Tishana's using the vines to hold herself against the Immortal Sun. And we don't really get to see what's going on in her mind. And same thing is true with Vona. And then, at the last minute, as they're all playing Hungry Hungry Hippos, the floor collapses. And we go to the next part of the story.
So next, we join up with Vraska, Jace, and everyone's favorite Sphinx they love to hate, Azor. So
I thought that was Ahamaret.
You know what? You might be right. You know, we don't know too much about Azor right now, but we're about
That's true.
Find out, because Azor greets our two heroes by saying, if this Gorgon is not my prisoner, then who have you brought for me to seal? He's talking to Jace straight up like, you're bringing somebody here for me to handle, and probably not in a nice way. And so Jace is, you know, sitting there, and Vraska is kind of focused. I mean, not kind of. She is focused. She's like, I've got to get information out of Azor before we kill him. He's more useful to us, you know, with answers than he is dead. So she starts, asking him, or basically telling him, you know, or no. First, Azor says to Jace, you know, I congratulate you for not destroying the guilds that I have left you. And Jace kind of goes, thank you. And he goes, you're welcome. It's kind of awkward. But anyway, so then Azor goes, well, behold, you know, my finest creation. And he steps aside, revealing in the ceiling the Immortal Sun. And he, you know, says, you know, this is used to lock away planeswalkers. And Vraska's all, wait a minute. Sir Nicholas, well, she knows him as Nicol Bolas, but
does he want something that locks away planeswalkers?
Right. And she's like, why would he want something that would create, you know, a prison? And so she could tell that, you know, Azor's trying to fight against Jace's mental ward here, but unsuccessfully, you know, and Jace kind of just chills, holding this thing up. And she's like, all right, Azor, talk. You know, or I'll kill you where you stand. And Azor's like, I'm not going to tell you nothing. And then Jace looks at him and goes, you'll refer to her as captain. And he kind of pushes into his spell. And Azor's just like, okay. And so he starts, you know, puffs his chest out reluctantly and starts talking. And he's like, For thousands of years, I traveled around countless worlds and instilled order and governance. And he keeps on chanting the mantra, you know, the law is meant to be followed. And, you know, Ravnica was just one of his stops along the way. And, you know, then Vraska's like, thinking, you know, oh, he's still trying to fight against Jace, but Jace is still holding up pretty strong. And then she's like, well, you hit Ravnica. Why didn't you stay? You know, and he's like, well, Ravnica's, yeah, one of the many worlds that I finished and then moved on. And then he's like, Jace, have you, you know, held up when in my absence? And Jace isn't really trying to beat around the bush here. He goes, you know, no, I have not. You know, it's still in turmoil.
Mm-hmm.
And Azor's like, well, these guilds are a perfect system. You know, they're not meant to have any faults whatsoever, so it's your fault that they're not working. And
Vraska chimes in with, the guilds were a perfect system. But
yes.
The guilds have turned malicious in your absence.
Exactly.
And Azor's like, whose fault is that? I gave Ravnica the guilds and countless other worlds perfect systems. And he's pretty much talking about how he has given the gift of law to so many worlds.
The gift.
And he doesn't pay attention to the fact that everything is his fault, including what's going on Ixalan with the war over the Immortal Sun and the vampires of Torazon.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, after talking about this, he comes to something where he's talking about this is his...
Or he's talking about the friend that helped him make the Immortal Sun, and it was part of a plan, and they were supposed to lure this being to Ixalan to trap it.
Diabolical planeswalker.
Right, and you know, Azor's like, well, I held up my end of the bargain, and I'm just waiting for my friend who obviously hasn't fulfilled his. My execution was perfect.
So then comes the question, what evil were you trying to imprison? Vraska asks. And his answer was a fiend who was a danger to all the multiverse. The plan was perfect, naturally. Who was a part of your plan? He was my friend. He was helped supposed to get me back my spark when our plan worked, which it did not. So your friend abandoned you? Well, yeah, he was supposed to lure him to a faraway plane, and then I was going to use the Immortal Sun to bring him here and lock him.
Right.
But obviously, that hasn't happened, and I've been here for thousands of years.
Right, and Vraska straight up tells Azor, you know... Well, Azor goes, I fixed this plane. And then Vraska goes, this plane was never broken. And Azor gets a little miffed, so he starts charging at them both. And then Jace allows both of them to kind of disappear, and they kind of dodge. And Azor's like, you know, where'd you go? You know, reveal yourself. And, you know, they kind of slice his ankle a little bit, kind of keeping him, you know, letting him know that they're still there and kind of
hurting him a little bit. Well,
and
then Jace attacks with his psychic power, and Azor just kind of gets this migraine and gasps.
Yes.
And Jace and Vraska are talking to each other if they're hurt. And Vraska, of course, wants to petrify him. And Jace is like, no. This guy doesn't deserve death. That's too easy.
Yes.
He deserves punishment.
Right, and then Azor just keeps on going, I am the arbiter of law! And then Jace kind of, like, tightens his hold on Azor's mind, and he's like, you know, shut up, let her talk. And Vraska's just, you know, she just starts laying into him, basically saying, you created this artifact. Sure, it's powerful, but it's created such turmoil and chaos and a struggle for power and control here on Ixalan. Like, don't you see what you've done? And... you know, Azor's just completely in denial, thinking that he's, you know, doing everything right. And then, you know, Vraska's sitting there getting ready to really lay into him more. And then Jace is like, hold on, I need to do this.
Captain.
Yes,
he interjects
Captain.
With Captain, very calm and collected, and says, I think I need to do this. And
right.
She's like, do you want to punish him? And I was like, well, yeah. It is my responsibility to act on the behalf of Ravnica. So Vraska's like, very well. So now, this completely changes. And Jace starts working into him with his hieromancy and talks about everything. So essentially, I'm going to quote this. The Living Guild Pact maintains balance between the guilds of Ravnica. You, Azor, Peyrune of the Azorius, are an inherent part of Ravnica and have caused imbalance not just on my home but on countless other planes. Vraska is there, standing there and listening as Azor is quivering and cowering like a little kitten. He could have fought, but he didn't. Not only did you decide it was your place to govern what was not yours, you also never stopped to consider the consequences of your actions. Ixalan is in peril. Ravnica was built to be unstable after you departed, and countless other worlds have likely suffered from your deliberate intervention. Whatever your intentions were, you did not seek to understand the full ramifications of your choices. And now it comes, here's a little twist. Azor sputters through the pain of this hieromancy and says, our intention was to imprison Nicol Bolas. As Vraska goes wide-eyed, as just cannot believe it. And Raska looks over at Jace and just not
sure. Yeah, Jace is just like frozen because, again, you know, this is part of his memory that he did not regain, you know, with the flood of his memories. But now that all of this is sort of falling into place and Vraska is realizing that Nicol Bolas is the one who hired her to come and steal the Immortal Sun, you know, the very thing that they were trying to use to imprison him, you know, she's just thrown for a loop. And, you know, she's a brief image flashes in her mind and she can, you know, recall, you know, Nicol Bolas and the time that they met. And all of a sudden she's like, wait a minute, he knows him. This is, you know, this is just all complete mind blown for her.
Yes.
And so
at that moment, of course, he just remembered who Nicol Bolas is as she realizes this and goes, Azor, may I see how you know who he is? Jace asks. Now, of course, this is anybody else say this would be weird, but of course, this is how a telepath would phrase it. And the Sphinx's lip quivered and says yes. So at this moment, Jace dives into Azor's mind to be able to see Nicol Bolas. At this moment, you can see that his eyes are glowing with power, and it is just all bad news. He thanks Azor. After a few moments, he let a shuddering sigh, crease on his brow, and says, your intentions were noble, but the effect of the Immortal Sun on Ixalan has been catastrophic. You and the Immortal Sun are a danger to the stability of this plane. As a haze of blue magic just comes across the Sphinx's head and vanishes, Jace steps away and declares his sentence. You will be the master and caretaker of Useless Island. You will not be able to leave, and you will never meddle in the lives of sentient beings ever again. Leave the Immortal Sun here and depart with your life as living guild pact. That is my decree. And with that, Azor blinks, Vraska stops her petrification spell, and Azor leaves and vanishes.
Wow. And then she's left with the question, you know, she's asking Jace, why does Nicol Bolas want an artifact that imprisons planeswalkers?
And Jace responds with, Vraska, you need to know who you're working for.
Oh my gosh. I mean, this story is getting so good.
You know, like, of everything that I'm enjoying about this story is we're starting to see planeswalkers in less of an omnipotent light, and they're really starting to display more human characteristics. I think we can feel more in tune with these characters. The story has gotten so much better. I feel like even from the time we were on Zendikar, we're starting to get more emotion. We're starting to see more emotion, and I think our creative team is doing a lot better than they ever had before, barring back when we go back to the Brothers' War, which is old storytelling.
Right.
Which
and
is
not
a completely
only
different way.
I mean, this is like twofold here, because we are on a brand new plane. We're learning the lore of this plane, so we're getting all that brand new fun information with these new characters, but we're also seeing how existing characters that we've known throughout the course of Magic's history are finally interacting, and you know, it's all kind of coming together. And I just love how they can hit both sides of that in the same set and just make it work and flow so well. So yeah, continued kudos to the story team for making an amazing story that we get to follow here.
Yeah. And I'm just excited now. A couple things, like I think last week we were talking about how we were going to find out what this induced amnesia card was going to be and why Jace is doing it on Vraska.
Right.
We still don't know.
No.
And it could be for anything. I mean, obviously we thought Azor might have been able to penetrate Jace's attack and make Vraska do something unforgivable, but that didn't happen. I'm at a loss for words for what's actually going to happen and why this induced amnesia is going to happen. The only thing I can think of is that there's a possibility of some sort of memory trigger that Nicol Bolas put into her mind that would force her to do something against her will. and well, he's going to get rid of it.
Well, if you remember, when she met Nicol Bolas, he did teach her a spell that was supposed to call on his associate at the right time. And maybe Jace is going to realize this. And I don't know. I mean, we speculated on the actual, the card, the third story card. Oh my gosh, I can't even remember what it was. The Diabolic Tutor that wishes.
Mastermind's Acquisition.
Mastermind's Acquisition, right. So the name of that card would suggest that Nicol Bolas does actually get the Immortal Sun. But
what if the Mastermind is Ugin?
What if the Mastermind is who?
Ugin.
Oh my
I mean,
goodness.
You got to remember that Ugin did implant a memory into Jace without him knowing
yep.
that if anybody looked into his memories, he would planeswalk to Ixalan.
Right. Oh my gosh. You're very true. It could be Ugin. It could be Nicol Bolas. But, I mean, so that would then sort of, I mean, if Jace is going into Vraska's mind to force her to forget something, then, and maybe it's without her knowing, you know, we have no idea. But,
no.
Ooh, that idea is very intriguing. Spoilers. Ugin could definitely be the mastermind behind all
right?
of this.
Right? What if they've actually been working together?
Ugin and Bolas?
Now that he died and came back to life?
What? Oh my god.
I mean, it's doubt it, but it's possible.
Right. Right. And I still want to see how Ralzeric fits into all this.
Yeah.
I really do.
Hopefully soon.
Hopefully soon. Yep.
I feel... With all these Ravnican things coming up, we're going to be returning to Ravnica soon.
Maybe I think we will return to Ravnica.
Re-return, the third time we come back to a plane.
It's going to be called Ravnica, we're back. No, but remember,
man,
how are they going to do the lettering? Because remember how it was, you know, the same letters and the three sets? Like, if it's only going to be one set.
It might be one set. We don't know.
Could be.
But it's what? RTR, Gatecrash, and Dragon's Maze. So it's
RG and D.
So what if the name of the set is Return to Galaxy Terra or something? I don't know.
I see what you're doing there.
A bunch of different things where they pair them together and they represent all three areas.
What if it's returning the Guild Pack to Dominaria? Boom.
I mean, I doubt Azor has been to Dominaria, but sure.
No. Yeah. Okay. All right. We've speculated long enough here. We got some other stuff we want to talk about.
Do we?
We got some brief news and announcements to go over. So why don't we head over to As Foretold.
I don't have anything that As Foretold this week. Maybe it's a time spell.
You just need something with CMC zero and you're good. I mean, Wheel of Fate.
Gut shot.
All right. So, we have a bit of news here to talk about. Greg, why don't you enlighten us on this week's news?
So yesterday, Wizards came out and brought us information about Nationals. Of course, they've lowered some. Your need of Planeswalker points to be able to get into Nationals. So that depends on country. So different countries will have different thresholds. I didn't see anything in there for America. We also got a reveal on the promotional card that we're going to get with playing in Nationals, and that is an Ixalan Flooded Strand foil.
Ooh, that sounds spicy.
If you guys haven't looked at the art, it is on pretty much any type of social media. I did not retweet it. I'm sorry. But it is on the mothership. I can't remember what the name of the article. But we don't know exact details. We do know that there's a couple events that they're going to be having these Nationals at, mostly coinciding with some GPs. But more information to follow in March.
Okay.
Of this year. I think the first Nationals is in June, though.
Very interesting. Yeah, another foil alternate art Flooded Strand. That sounds very intriguing.
It looks really good.
I mean, it's a blue fetch land, right? That's
it's
value.
It's blue-white. Now, the funny thing is the blue-white is the cheapest of the blue fetches.
Oh, I know, right?
Yeah, because the enemy color fetches are just bonkers. And, of course, the black-blue one is good, but it's not as strong as the other two that are enemy color.
Right. Yeah, we need to get those enemy fetches reprinted in standard one of these days. And, we will probably have to go back to Zendikar for them. But,
yeah.
Oh, well. Hopefully, then, Zendikar will be lush and full of energy and mana, and the Eldrazi will be long gone. And we can just see Zendikar for what it is.
That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
That would be so nice. All right. Well, that's kind of it for news. Actually, no. We can actually lump this into news and announcements. It's kind of more along the lines of financial, but still kind of news. This set, Rivals of Ixalan, when it previewed, we were looking at it as a set that was just
worth
dry
nothing
of value. Your most expensive cards at a time were the Planeswalker card, like the Planeswalker deck Planeswalker cards.
Yeah, they were what, $10 each?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And people were a little skeptical about, you know, the long-term value of this set, and let alone if any of these cards were going to be playable in Standard. Well, let me tell you, there have been some changes. Just in the few short weeks this set has been out, we have some cards that have ballooned in value. I mean, it's got to soak up the price somehow. Some of these cards have to be worth something. But, Greg, what is the most valuable card in the set, and where is it sitting right now?
The most valuable card in the set is Kumena, sitting around $22.
Ooh. Yeah. Then, of course, is the TCG mid-price, so it's the one a lot of people use to price out their cards.
Yeah. It's kind of surprising, because Kumena came out of the pre-release doing really well. I mean, I got to play with it in my pre-release, and it does a lot of stuff, but I don't think, even with this first-round draft picks of standard playouts, we didn't see any Merfolk decks arise from that Star City Games over the past weekend. So
right.
It's really interesting to see that this most expensive card isn't being driven by Standard.
Right. Now,
a lot of people are speculating on this, one, for Modern, and two, this card is bonkers in EDH.
Yes, it really is. And that actually kind of segues me into my point about what might be actually driving the price of this. I'm going to do a quick look here because, yeah, okay. So if you haven't seen it yet, the Command Zone puts out game nights, and they've actually synced up pretty well with the release dates of these sets. They play the commanders from these sets. So, specifically, Rivals of Ixalan, they played all the multicolored commanders. So,
yeah.
Zakama, Kumena, Alenda, and Azor. This video has already been viewed 179,000 times, and it was put out a week ago. And it showcased Kumena. Spoiler alert, that's actually the deck that won the game. And it's interesting because if you go into some of these online shops, the cards that are used in that deck show up in the recently most bought list.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, I would not be surprised if people are watching game nights just to net deck the decks, because in all honesty, they're a lot of fun. But
right.
I think they use some really extremely powerful cards that aren't easy to acquire for everybody. So it's kind of in this awkward space of, sure, you get to have access to these cool cards, but not everybody can invest at that level.
Right, exactly. Now, the viewership this last weekend for, they had a Star City Games team constructed event, and then they had a Grand Prix Indianapolis, but that was limited. And actually, there were some numbers that came out that limited GP had some really, really low viewership. I don't think too many people really like watching limited on stream. I know there's a lot who do, and don't get me wrong, it's a very important aspect of, you know, if you want to progress and get on the Pro Tour, but I think people just might like tuning in to watch Constructed, and they kind of can get their wrap their heads around it a little easier. I mean, do you agree?
I totally agree, because, you know, if you ask me, if I'm going to watch anything limited, I don't want to watch the draft. I want to see what's in the packs. I want to see people's decisions, because once you get past that, it's pretty much cut and paste. You know what's going to happen. It's not that intriguing, but how people choose to draft, what they choose to draft, is a really good part of limited.
Right.
Otherwise, right. The rest of it's boring.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think that that's a great reason why our second most expensive card currently in the set, which is Rekindling Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, what's the TCG mid on Rekindling Phoenix at?
14.
Okay. All right. Well, that actually showed up quite a bit at that SCG with the standard decks as a as a 4-drop red card. It is competing with Chandra, Hazoret, what have you. But I really see this card as being an all-star moving forward in any kind of deck, whether it's a red deck, mid-range,
18.
Or... What's that?
It's 18.
18. Okay, yeah. I thought it was a little closer to 20, yeah. But this card is, I believe, going to be... ending up becoming the most expensive card in Standard. Because the fact that it requires you to use two removal spells, I mean, unless you exile it, and not everyone's playing Vraska's Contempt, but if you kill it, you know, Lightning Strike it, it goes to the graveyard, you get your Elemental token, which you then have to use another removal spell to get rid of to make sure that the Phoenix goes away completely. And that's not to say you can't cast Liliana's Death Majesty and reanimate it, and now you got to use a whole nother two removal spells to get rid of it. I mean, this card is very, very powerful, and I can really see it sticking around for quite some time. It is one mana less than Glorybringer. I mean, look at this versus Glorybringer. Right? You swing in with Glorybringer exerted, you kill the Phoenix, and you're left with the token. Well, guess what? Next turn, the token goes away, the Phoenix comes back with haste and beats in for 4, and your Glorybringer doesn't untap during the next step. That seems like a big lopsided matchup right there.
It really does. You're right. So, just going off, we'll pass from Rekindling Phoenix. What's the next card that's getting played?
That would be Jade Light Ranger. And Jade Light Ranger is a very, very interesting card. There's been a lot of talk about it. Some people have actually likened it to the Tireless Tracker from Shadows Over Innistrad, simply because it is a green 3-drop that has exceeding value. This one, when it enters the battlefield. Tireless Tracker was a bit more of a long game, but people are playing this Jade Light Ranger in Constrictor decks, Winding Constrictor decks, because if you get those counters with a Winding Constrictor, you're getting a 6/5 for 3 sometimes. That's pretty ridiculous. And
wow.
Yeah, and it doesn't even it's a Merfolk, but it doesn't have to go in a Merfolk deck. It can go in any green deck you want. I mean, just by itself in a vacuum, you know, it's a 2/1 that could come in as a 4/3, or you draw some cards, or any combination of the two. And the fact that Explore lets you put the cards in the graveyard instead of the bottom of the library can make this even more useful in the right deck.
Yes, definitely.
And guess
what? And then there's a couple...
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You had it.
I was going to say, it's a 3-drop, so you can hit it with Collected Company in Modern. So be ready for that, but go ahead.
Well, the other thing is this card just gets you value. It's really strong. I never knew it was going to be that good. I'm very happy I have a pre-release foil.
Oh, that's good stuff right there, man. Nice,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And then, you know, you go down the line. The Immortal Sun, this is solely a price driven by EDH, is like $8.
Mm-hmm.
I cut across a couple because a lot of people are expecting Twilight Prophet to be really good for Standard. I'm not sure. A 4/4/2/4 with flying in a set, it's cute, but gosh.
You don't think it's got legs to go the long haul, do you?
I don't know. I think it's good, but it just dies to so much removal.
Yeah. Well, with the 4... toughness, it will avoid those three damage spells, which is kind of cool, but I mean, yeah, it sits on the battlefield. It doesn't give you an ETB effect, which in this day and age isn't always a good thing. But it does have to make it all the way around, and you do have to have Ascend, and you have to be able to draw a card that's not a land to be effective. I see what you're saying. There are a lot of ifs, and it is not a guaranteed slam dunk, you know, all-star. But I definitely do see there being some decks where they take advantage of this card, and it shows some real strength. But, I don't know if it's the third most expensive card in the set, though. Or fourth, I should say.
Have you noticed Azor's Gateway has doubled in price?
I have. I mean, there's a lot of haters out there saying this card is trash, but at the same time, it's really starting to spark some people's interest.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, the flip side is just dumb. Like, if you ever flip it, it's you almost have to win the game, you know? But I'm already thinking about this card, you know, using it with cards like Eternal Scourge from, Eldritch Moon?
Gosh. Yeah, because you can exile it and recast it. What about Miss Hollow Griffin?
That's a 4-drop. You've got a 3 and a 4-drop, and then you've got that, Torrent Elemental from Fate Reforged? That's some ridiculous...
Gosh, that's like a 5-drop.
So, load your deck with cards that you can play from exile and just get value.
That's funny. Right? I didn't even
everyone's
think
like,
about those.
Everyone's like, oh, it's, you know, it's exiling it, so it's
and,
not as good.
Just to throw it out there, all three of these cards work in a Soul Tie deck.
Oh my gosh. Soul Tie, Modern, Azor's Gateway. Oh man. That sounds... With a top end Exsanguinate. Why not? Or no, I'm sorry, Greg. How could I do you like that? Top end Torment of Hailfire.
There you go. Except you don't gain life from that.
Well, you won't need the life when you kill everybody.
True.
Anyway, all right. Continue. We will continue dreaming here at the Win Condition because that's what we do. And then real quick, how about this? All four Planeswalkers, Planeswalker deck, and those from the actual set, right around, what, $6, $7, even $8? We don't have a Planeswalker that's north of $20 in this set. That's first for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, even Vraska from a regular Ixalan, I want to say she got up to $20 at a time. I mean, I think she's in the teens right now, but, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but these Planeswalkers are really nothing to write home about in this set.
No. I like the Whatley, the green-white one. She does a lot, but otherwise it's mediocre at best.
Agreed. I think that someday there will be a hidden stockpile, possibly vampire-related deck that pushes this into an extremely powerful realm, but until that happens, she's not really gonna, you know, be shooting up anytime soon. So maybe this is the time to invest in your Planeswalkers. Maybe Angrath will fall a little bit more even, but
oh, definitely.
I don't know.
I do not think it is that good.
No. So all right, well, there is a little bit of value, you know, bubbling up to the top in this set, and it was bound to happen. I think that foils from this set will be the real money.
Oh,
cards.
Yeah.
So, because, I mean, a lot of these cards are great for EDH. So if you want to get that foil Immortal Sun or that foil Zakama, you know, or your foil Kumena.
Oh, like, God, $50.
Yeah.
Like
yeah, if you open
50,
one of those, congratulations.
Yeah.
You might want to sell it right now while they're at a high, and then once the Pro Tour hits, oh, wait, it's Modern. That's right. Never mind. So this is going to be interesting.
Whoa. There are two cards in this set that people are speculating for Modern.
What's that?
Blood Sun.
Oh.
A Return
Blood
of Titan
Sun.
Shift.
That's right. Blood Sun went through a bit of a roller coaster
because
in terms of its price.
You know what Blood Sun does, right?
Why don't you educate us?
So there are these lands out of Ravnica, not the guild gates, the original ones, that when they entered the battlefield, they'd bounce another land. Now, when you have a blood moon out, not only do they not enter the battlefield tapped, they don't make you bounce a land.
Right.
So, not only this card is replacing the effect of Amulet of Vigor, banned in Modern, and it'll make it so that that deck can just go, I prime time, I get all these lands, I scape shift, I swing into you and kill you.
Right. Well, Amulet of Vigor isn't banned in Modern.
Isn't it?
No, they banned the Bloom.
Oh,
Summer Bloom.
Summer Bloom, the play three lands. That's right.
Right, right.
I still think that we can have a return to this play, because not only does it make it so those lands are better, it also makes it so you draw a card.
True. And you can power this thing out as quick as maybe turn two with like a Simeon Spirit Guide, or if you're red-green ramping a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact that it draws you a card already makes it playable, you know?
Yeah.
So, Blood Sun definitely is something to look at. And also, I've been hearing so much about Galta, Primal Hunger. This card is, and we'll talk about this a little bit later in our Brews section, but this card has definitely seen more play than we probably gave it credit for. People are able to cast this thing for two, you know, multiple times.
Yeah.
And it is legendary, but they're running numbers. They're running lots of these, because a 12-12 for two, it's that you really cannot beat that rate, especially if you have a way to give it haste and swing in. Galta is definitely a card that I can see, you know, rising to the top in long-term value out of this set.
Yep. Yeah, no, I completely agree. Even though it did get that that promotional version.
Oh, yeah, that promotional version is sweet. Super
it
sweet.
Really is. It is.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
All right.
We talked a lot about finance, which we normally don't do.
Right.
Sorry.
Let's move on to our final segment. We're going to head on over to Through the Looking Glass.
Where we give you all sorts of different new information.
Yes.
Indeed. Or old. Sometimes it's old.
From spoilers to deck list to brews. All right. Well, let's start out by diving into this wild, wild west that we have here.
Oh, my gosh.
We had a whole lot of new decks surface with the bannings from the energy decks and the Ramunap red deck.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that, you know, we're here looking at TCG Player, the latest 20 standard decks. I don't even know what a lot of these do. So we're just going to kind of click through here and tell you what these people are playing, just to kind of get your juices
Wait,
flowing.
Is that
get
like
your
that,
mind
that
going.
Teamer Dinos deck?
Yeah, let's break this one down here. This looks spicy.
Gosh, there's just so much.
So, I mean, at the lower end of your curve, if there is such a thing in a dinosaur deck, you've got your Drover of the Mighty, which is a pretty much a staple in any dinosaur deck. It's a 1/1 for one and a green that you can tap to add one mana of any color to your mana pool, which is the going rate for mana dorks nowadays. But it also has the benefit of getting +2/+2 as long as you control a dinosaur. And guess what? You're probably going to control a dinosaur. So
yeah.
You've got that. At your two drop, you've got your Thunderherd Migration. Greg, I know you've been excited about this card.
It looks pretty good.
Yeah. So you've got those for your two drops. It's running a Braid. You got your Commune with Dinosaurs. So you can fill out the first couple turns of this with some effective stuff here. There's that Thrashing Brontodon. There's only two in the main deck, but very versatile. 3/4 body for three. It's really, really good. But then also three drop Death Gorge Scavenger. That's going to be a really, really good card in standard moving forward. Do you want to take us through the higher end of this curve, Greg?
So then we go to Registrar Alpha, which is a 4/4 for five that gives you a 3/3 dinosaur, and all other creatures gain haste. All other dinosaurs gain haste. I must be looking at a different list than yours. Which list are we looking at?
I'm looking at the one on top by Crimson. Yeah, it didn't necessarily say it finished.
Okay. I was looking at the SCG event from last weekend.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. The one in Dallas.
I like that one a little bit more than this.
Okay, yeah, I'll click over to it here. All right, well yeah, go ahead and continue. You got the...
So for this
one,
we top into Registrar Alpha, Ripjaw Raptor, which both of those you guys should know.
Right.
Carnage Tyrant, and then the unknown, Galta, the Primal Hunger. Then two Chandra, Torch of Defiance, and two Nissa. Seems pretty good, right? I mean, that Nissa does a lot more than you think it's going to. Just because it gives you things and stuff off the top of your deck. How could you not like that?
I hear things and stuff are good. And Greg, I know you were excited to see that this Galta, they're playing a four of Galta in the main deck here.
Yeah, yeah. This is the one I was talking about. This guy took, sixth place, which is pretty good.
It is pretty good.
But he was also, The dream heart is Galta on turn 5, swinging with haste. I mean, if you've got a 12-12 swinging hastily at you, I don't know what you're doing. You kill it, maybe? Maybe you have something to kill it. The thing's so huge, it just doesn't die to anything. And then it's also running Rekindling Phoenix to get around with more stuff, and Sweltering Suns to deal with these Anointed Procession decks, because guess what? Hidden Stockpile is still a card and is still getting played.
I'm telling you, man, Sweltering Suns is where it's at. Standard needs to recognize that you're going to need some kind of early board wipes.
Oh yeah,
to handle those decks.
This deck was running, the Admiral's Orders, the counterspell on one blue, and Silent Gravestone in the sides to say no to the Scarab God decks.
Yeah, I mean, Settle the Wreckage is a thing. You know, and everyone's saying Admiral's Order is a great way to counter that, you know, the Settle the Wreckage. But I stand by what I said earlier. The thought and allure of a one mana counterspell is so tempting not to run this card. So,
yeah,
I really, really like that.
So,
all right, let's.
What other decks are you interested in here?
Well, let's stick to this SCG here and move on down to. This deck by Jim Davis.
Are you sure you don't want to talk about who took first place here?
Who took first place here? The mono red aggro deck.
Yeah.
In the absence of our cards that got banned, we still see a mono red deck rise to the top.
And I
still
don't
running
really
some
see
deserts.
Much of a change. Yeah.
Still running some deserts, but no Ramunap Ruins. Here you go. Four of Hazoret. I mean, all in on the big girl herself. But you still got the most important, in my opinion. I know Ramunap Ruins and Rampaging Ferocidon were key cards in the deck, but the most important aspects of this deck is the fact that you have those hasty creatures that prevent your opponent from blocking. And you have your Hazorets and you have your Glorybringers. That's kind of the... And the Bomat Courier for added distance and card draw. So yeah, the heart of this deck is honestly still there. You know, it just got a couple tools, you know, ripped out of it. But Mono Red is still very, 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 very strong.
Yeah.
So don't think it's going away anytime soon.
Okay, so you were wanting to talk about this deck by Jim Davis, was it?
Yes. Just the fact that we've never seen, not never, but it's been a while since we've seen a deck that focuses around auras, you know, because there's not too much hexproof floating around Standard these days, but cards like Odonto Vanguard, which you can give indestructible until end of turn, you know, just at the cost of 4 life. You don't have to tap anything. So it's a very, very strong card, very resilient. But this is playing a lot of low drop creatures like Sky Marcher Aspirant, which is a 2/1 for a white that ascends to get flying. You got Sacred Cat, Adorned Pouncer, and SRAM Senior Edificer. I know a lot of people have been talking about SRAM with artifacts and equipment, but geez, he does auras also. So when you're running things like, you know, Cartouche of Solidarity, Cartouche of Knowledge, and my new favorite, Curious Obsession, he's going to be drawing you a lot of cards. Now let me ask you, Greg, what sounds good about Curious Obsession and Adorned Pouncer?
Is it Double Strike?
The fact that it gets +1/+1 on a Double Strike creature,
yeah,
that seems pretty good.
Yeah.
But also the fact that Curious Obsession draws you a card when a creature damages your opponent, and on a double striking creature that could draw you two cards?
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts. That's absolutely crazy.
Yeah, it does a lot of things. Now, as a question to you, what do you think about the Sacred Cat?
I think the Sacred Cat is good. I think that it's a life-linking creature that you're going to slap a Cartouche of Knowledge on, so it'll be a 2/2 flyer that gains you life.
That seems strong, right?
Yeah, and it's an early, not a threat, but it's early defense that you can later embalm for added value. I think Sacred Cat's a fine card. You know, I think it's a great... We saw it in that God Pharaoh's Gift deck at the World Championships with Pascal Maynard running that in his deck.
Yep. I feel like both Adorned Pouncer and Sacred Cat fill this one spot of these creatures, yeah, they could die. But guess what? When they're coming back, they're going to be better. And I'm going to do more with them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, later game, if you eternalize that Adorned Pouncer and then throw the Curious Obsession on it, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, if you threw a Cartouche of Knowledge on there as well, that's like nigh unbeatable almost.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this deck is really cool. I think it did take advantage of the fact that this is a brand new standard, and this deck does suffer against things like Vraska's Contempt and exiling effects, because indestructibility is great, but you know, people are going to find a way to deal with these creatures a little more effectively. I think this is a great deck for somebody who likes this type of play, because it is very competitive.
Yep.
I just think that give it time and someone will figure it out, and you know, it might not be as strong.
Yeah. I think there's one other deck that I think was kind of this emerging deck, and that is Blue-Red Skies.
Yes.
And I'm sorry, there is no Locust God.
Ugh. You know what? That's okay.
But it is running Hope of Gyarapur.
It is. I think that's fantastic.
And that Warkite Marauder.
Warkite Marauderer.
That's that two-drop that when it attacks, it turns a defending creature into a 0/1.
Yes. Loses all abilities. Oh, my gosh. That's so good.
It's like, you know what? I'm going to go into combat. Target your Scarab God. You pay now or you don't pay at all.
Yep. And I mean, favorable winds as a 4/4. I mean, all your creatures in here are going to be getting flying. I mean, you're running that Whirler Virtuoso to pump out some Thopters. I mean, that might be your only way to really gain energy. You got your Aether Sphere Harvester, too. But, your Maverick Thopterist doesn't get you energy. Anyway, yeah, the fact that Whirler Virtuoso can be a 2/1 with getting you two bodies, one of them which is a flyer, seems pretty good. So
yeah, no, it does. It's exciting.
How about that Nimble Obstructionist in the sideboard?
It looks good. What I'm kind of surprised about is even though they have like Whirler Virtuoso and Aether Sphere Harvester, why wouldn't they run Aether Hub in the land spot? I mean, they're already in it. It would give them any color, and on top of that, it gives them the ability to power up that Aether Sphere Harvester after they've gotten past two attacks.
Sure, and do you notice a certain red instant removal spell that's missing from this list?
They're not running a Braid in the main.
And they're not running Harnessed Lightning.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a shock to me.
Well, I think it's just because there's no real way to officially get energy to do more than a couple damage. So Shock does more for them and Lightning Strike does more for them.
That's true. And what is it? The lightning harness lightning can't go for the face. So that does kind of play a part in it too. All right. Well, that's awesome. I love that we're seeing so many new decks here. And, of course, you still got the dominance of red, mono red. You also have...
I wouldn't say it's dominance. There's 1-2 decks there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's true. But what I do like is the fact... Well, I mean, also, you have the Grixis energy. And I think we called that last episode such that if you have an energy deck that survives, it's probably going to be Grixis because it's running all the key pieces here in Harness Lightning, Glint Sleeve Siphoner, Glimmer of Genius, and did I say Harness Lightning already? I think it Scarab God. Obviously, you want to be running the Scarab God. So Grixis energy will definitely be a strong energy choice moving forward, but innovation abound. Speaking of which, Greg, I wanted to bring to light for 5 mana again another idea that I've been brewing. This isn't entirely a deck, but it's something for you all to consider. We have a new card in Standard called Teelanali Summoner, and that's for 1 and a red. You get a 1/1 creature that when it attacks, you can pay red and X, and if you do, you create X 1/1 red elemental creature tokens tapped and attacking.
Ugh.
So this really got me thinking here, aside from the fact that this was my foil rare from the box that I pulled. This reminded me of another card that I really enjoy, and that is Throne of the God Pharaoh from Hour of Devastation.
Ooh.
So what Throne of the God Pharaoh says is at the end of your turn, each opponent loses 1 life for each tapped creature you control. Now, if you do not have the City's Blessing, those tokens will go away at end of turn, but I'm pretty sure you can sequence it such that they'll lose the life before those creatures get exiled, because it all happens
you totally can.
At the beginning of your end step. So let's just say you play your summoner, you swing in, and you make 5 tokens. You know, it's hard not... You probably are going to get the City's Blessing off that, so let's just roll with it. And you have your Throne of the God Pharaoh out. Let's say they block your summoner, sure, get rid of the problem, and then they'll take 5 from the tokens. And then, end of turn, they'll take 5 more from the Throne of the God Pharaoh. That's 10 damage. That's nuts. Now, let's say you were to run something like... Oh, I don't know, Metallic Mimic. You know, it's a bit of a stretch, but if you were to have a Metallic Mimic out naming elementals in a pinch, you know, those would be 2/2 elementals swinging in at your opponent. And I'm gonna bring it up again because I think it's a great card. Claim to Fame works on both Teelanali Summoner and Metallic Mimic. So you can play sort of a mid-rangey deck. You don't want to drop Teelanali Summoner on 2. That's kind of counterproductive. But if you can control the board with damage and kill spells, drop the Summoner later in the game, let it die, and then you can claim it back and fame it with haste, putting more tokens out. I mean, this is going to be some aggressive damage heading towards your opponent.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
Would you want to splash green for Galta in this deck?
Galta could be. Yeah, and the thing is, you can take these couple cards we're talking about and build anything. You could run this in that Locust God Izzet deck because you're making those Locusts doing damage with Throne of the God Pharaoh. I mean, that could work. You're drawing cards.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm even thinking back to my Mardu build, because if you're running Dusk Dawn, you know, you can wipe the board and you can bring back your Teelanali Summoner and your Metallic Mimic. Like, and if you're running black, if you're running mid-range, like let's say Mardu mid-range, you can run things like Gonti. You could run Twilight Prophet because you're going after that. You're going after that
City's
Ascend.
Blessing.
Yeah, exactly. And you're going to be able to get Ascend with Teelanali Summoner, no problem. You could even run Alenda, the Dusk Rose, and you could run Yeheni. I know I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but all those cards you can bring back with Dusk Dawn.
You
and
could.
I know that,
yeah.
Yeah, I know you're, you know, card draw is important, and I do like sword point diplomacy as well, but the fact that every single creature you could run in this deck not only is a great mid-range value card, but they can all be brought back to your hand with Dusk Dawn.
Yeah.
It just seems so incredibly strong. And kind of as an added bonus, you know, I mean, you're running mid-range, you go with Alenda, and if you have that Yeheni out and you sack all these things, and now all of a sudden you're dealing with token vampires, if it's the right moment in the game, you can cast Claim on your Metallic Mimic and name vampires if that's what your jam's going to be for that turn moving forward. I mean, it's versatile. There's lots of stuff that you can do.
Yeah.
And I can't help but say, if you have that Metallic Mimic on Elemental, if you're running that Rekindling Phoenix, your Elemental token will come out as a 1/2. Just saying.
Horrible, man. You're horrible. You're incorrigible.
Yep. So, anyway, Tilinali's Summoner really sparked my interest. Go ahead and run with it. Let us know what you find, if it's good, if it's not. But, brew away in this wild, wild west that we're dealing with. All right, Greg, I think we've gone on long enough here. You can get your Tilinali's Summoners, your Kumenas, your Rekindling Phoenixes, all at Flipside Gaming, at flipsidegaming.com, which Greg reminded us at the beginning of the episode, if you use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, it'll save you 10% off your purchase and help contribute to future show giveaways.
Yeah.
So, Greg, why don't you tell all these fine, fine listeners where they can find you?
You can find me at NoobSlasher2003 on Twitter.
And you can find me at MTG_Sean on Twitter. The show is at The Win Condition. You can find us on Instagram at The Win Condition MTG. Check out our YouTube channel. We got a link in the show notes for you. And hit us up. Let us know what you think. And if you want us to brew anything for you or go over anything else, we appreciate the feedback.
Yep.
So, all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Always a pleasure.
And we will talk to y'all next week.